wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Down in the new basement studios by the lake. I need to say up front that if I sneeze or sniffle, it's because I currently have a tad of a summer cold.
Yeah, yeah. Just don't give it to me.
No. Don't worry about that. It's a podcast. I mean, this is not like some quarantine zone or anything like that. There's not plastic sheeting everywhere.
It should be, maybe.
Well, we do. We'd actually, it's funny, because right before the show today, we were talking about our setup, and we do need to add some of those
eggshell things.
I have some spare ones lying around at home.
Okay,
I bought them off Amazon.
This room is, I wouldn't say it's exclusively dedicated to our use, but it doesn't have a lot of regular social use. It's got a bunch of craft gear and things.
Yeah,
and so if you hang that up, put little bits of foam in different spots, it might change the echo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go. So anyway, I will apologize up front if there's an occasional because I have a summer cold.
Well, people
I will attempt to turn away from the microphone.
Realize we did a podcast not long ago where you ate on microphone on a regular basis. So
yes.
people are accustomed to hearing your noises.
All right, what do we have on the docket for today? Funny old week, summertime. We were going to meander through a little bit of sports, weren't we? But
right.
We weren't going to talk, and I want to say this up front for anyone going, oh, both of them, my thing. We don't talk about sports on this show, but we talk about sports culture and sports fandom and just sort of, we come at it from a slightly different angle. Although, to be fair, the baseball All-Star game has just been here in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
You went.
Yes.
What was it like going to, I've never been to an All-Star game.
It was
one of the big events on the baseball.
They were billing that thing to the season ticket holders. It was like, buy your season ticket so you can get the All-Star game. You know, they know years in advance. And so, they've had signs up in the stadium for 2 years at least saying, All-Star game's coming here in 2018. And it was, a big event. It was full, obviously. A lot of people hanging around.
People showed
up early. The game starts late because it's, a nationwide broadcast. Late for here. So normally a baseball game here starts at 7 o'clock, although they're polling all the season ticket holders as to whether they would like earlier or later games.
Oh, I think that's kind of nice.
That's kind of weird. I don't know if they're going to do anything.
Well, yeah. I want to say this. You can poll all your season ticket holders, but if, TV station S or TV station Y say we want it to start at 8 o'clock and here's your money, it's going to start at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, in baseball, they basically all own their own TV stations. So there's very few local baseball games generally are on channels. Well, and even there's barely any national games these days. I mean, I forget how few the Nats are going to be on. But
what did you answer the poll when you were asked?
No, I didn't care.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
So normally games start at 7, but this game was, you look in the paper. We had a lot of this with the World Cup, right? You look in the broadcast schedule, it's starting a certain time,
right?
Then a listing. So the broadcast was listed as starting at 7:30 or something, but then the paper said, oh, no, the game's at 8 o'clock. Game didn't start till 8:30 solidly. I mean, 8 o'clock is when they started there.
It wasn't an 8:17 because you have
no. It was give or take 8:30, but it was solidly in the 8:25 to 8:30 range or something like that. After their pomp and circumstance, which we'll talk about a little bit of that in a offshoot to this discussion. But it was the big event. They had lots of. You got to do both anthems because the Canadians are there too,
since there's
franchises in Canada. So you do both of those. And then, big national anthem thing, people throwing out ceremonial first pitches, all these.
What do you mean people? Did they have more than one?
Well, no, just one.
Okay. Who was the ceremonial?
I forget who. Somebody. They honored a bunch of Gold Star winners,
Okay, but it wasn't a celebrity. It wasn't politician A.
No, and he bounced it halfway to the plate.
Oh, he's yeah.
But everybody's there. And because of the fact that you knew it was going to be tighter security, they were really going through everything, make sure, nothing bad was going to happen there. The lines are going to be long. A lot of people showed up early, which actually seemed to work pretty well because everybody stretched out their arrival time. It's not like a typical thing where everybody's arriving as the game starts. Everybody wants to be there early enough. So we were in by 6:30.
Okay, wow. So a long time beforehand.
Good time to get some food and the like.
You could really get a load on.
The one of the people who was in the group I was with, he bought a t-shirt on his way in. He had arrived separate from me, so I was already going to see, and he arrives with a t-shirt and talks about how it was $44 for the All-Star Game t-shirt in the store there.
So we're now talking, like, when you say t-shirt, you actually mean a t-shirt. Like
cotton. No, it wasn't like a jersey or something
like
that.
It doesn't have, like, buttons on
it. Maybe it was a beefy tee or something.
Okay, all right, so we're talking
$44 bucks, and I was like, I'm not going to do that. I did look at some hats. I'm like, the kind of event that I don't really... Am I going to wear a baseball cap that says All-Star Game on it? I don't think so. There was a white one that I thought, maybe this would be a nice golf hat, you know, or something. But
it's interesting. I don't mean to cut you off. You and I had this discussion a couple of weeks ago when you were wearing your T-shirt that you'd bought at the Olympics.
Remember you were wearing it? Yeah, it was a Team GB.
I remember saying, ooh, I bought the same one. And we both completely randomly had a shared discussion about how it felt like, because it was a special event t-shirt,
right,
it was on sort of a far more restricted rotation as to how you wear it.
Right.
But to make my point, I also remember buying a hat from the Olympics.
Yeah.
I wear it all the time.
Yeah.
But I'll say this. I wear it all the time because it's a cool-looking hat. It was deep blue. It had, like, gold embroidery on it. So it's a pretty cool-looking hat. But to your point, I think there's a tendency when you go to these things, you find yourself making this very weird sort of impulse buy.
Right.
And then later on, you're like, why on earth did I buy that?
Yeah, I'm not really using it for anything. It's like a souvenir, but you're not... if it's a souvenir, then, well, you're not really going to wear it because it's supposed to be a souvenir you're going to hand down to your grandchildren or something stupid like that.
Do you have a room in your house where you keep my souvenir hats?
Right. So I didn't... I was like, I'm not going to buy that. Anyway, so we go out after the game and, you know, the street side vendors... shirts everywhere. And so I'm going by and I'm like, well, I still am not that excited about a shirt. But then at some point the guy's talking about it, and I heard, like, did he just say they're selling them for $5? I mean, $5 for a t-shirt's cheaper than buying a t-shirt you'd put, like, you know, your Hanes white t-shirt on.
These are knockoffs now. These are
They're definitely not as nice, you know, but it was a full, and so I just got a gray t-shirt with a All-Star Game something on the front because for $5 now I don't have to worry about, like, I'll be more likely to not wear it because I haven't even tried it on, you know, because it doesn't fit right or because it's not really that comfortable or something like that. It won't be because, oh, that's a special $5 t-shirt I'm going to keep on the back shelf, you know, and save it for something.
Although in a strange way, if we're talking about these things as collectibles, why not frame the, hey, this is the knockoff t-shirt that I got from the All-Star game. Right. And you can put a little plaque going, this $5. Is the t-shirt I got. It was only $5. Yeah. My buddy spent $45.
Yeah.
And there's your All-Star game memory.
He probably spent $44 on creating the plaque and the framing for it, though. So that would kind of moot the point.
Collectible, yeah.
You know, the game itself, so...
Well, that was my question now. As someone, you have season tickets to the Nats.
Yeah.
So, and
or a share of them.
And a share of them. I've never been to an All-Star game, and I tend not to watch them on TV. And remember now, I grew up in a culture where the best players, you know, we've just got done spending a couple of episodes where we talked about the World Cup. By extension, in soccer, the best players go and play for their national team.
Right.
So that therefore replaces the notion of some sort of All-Star recognition. Whereas, you know, most sports...
Yeah, no, but that doesn't really fit. I mean, because you're only playing for... Like, they...
See, I equate the two things. If I'm good enough to play for France, let's say, who just won the World Cup, then that would make me the equivalent of an All-Star.
Right, but you're not getting a game of all of the All-Stars in the Premier League playing against each other.
So what was the actual game? So what I'm saying is I've never been to an All-Star game. What was the actual game like...
Yeah, like,
what do you cheer? Do you cheer when your player does something? Do you cheer when...
So Nationals had three players in on the team. Bryce Harper, who everybody knows and really is not having a great year. He's hitting home runs, like, very well, but, it's a fan voting thing. So
he'll find his form when he plays for
Max Scherzer, the pitcher, and he was the starting pitcher for the National League. Maybe in part, you know, could have gone a couple different ways, but I think in part it's his home field and that jazz. Our closer, Sean Doolittle, who's actually injured, so he was in the introductions, but not in the actual game. So they introduce everybody. Obviously, the Nationals get big cheers. There's a number of former Nationals that everybody remembers fondly, most notably Wilson Ramos as a catcher for Tampa Bay. And he probably had the second biggest cheer out of anybody in the game, like even maybe more than Bryce. Max Scherzer had the biggest cheer. He's got the best, you know, best year going and all that. But the Wilson Ramos and then Blake Treinen, who got traded to the to Oakland. So, you know, they got lots of big cheers. Then you had a segment of people who got booed. Okay. But it was a very good-natured booing. Like, yeah. It was like a very, like, a boo, hi, we're smiling at you while we boo you, because, of course, we're booing you. So, like, I think the first Yankee introduced was, he's like, you know, they're, I forget even who it was, but he was not a starter, because they introduced all the non-starters at first in a big line.
Okay.
And then they introduced the starters. So it wasn't like Aaron Judge, who was one of the starters. It was just, I forget who it was, it's somebody there. So he gets a huge boo, because I think it was the first opportunity for people to say, we hate the Yankees, right? You know, so they get a big boo. Then the NL East opponents, you know, the division opponents, like, so the Phillies and the Mets,
they get
Braves, they got booed. But again, it was all like a little bit like jokey, and you get like a number of them, you know, they're getting booed and they smile, you know, like, cause they know, like, it's cause I'm in DC and DC's pretending to be big fans. And
or was it an entertaining game? The actual
I mean, like, parts of it are because, you know, it's a bit of an exhibition, but the people want to do what they want to do. So, like, Max Scherzer came out guns blazing and he almost struck out the side in the first inning, didn't, but you know, everybody was standing and cheering, you know, and going for it. You know, the people are all trying. On the other hand, you know, it's not a game for heavy strategy. You've got the best pitchers in. You know, and so it's tough, you know, like, you don't usually get a lot. They ended up with a decent number of runs, because now this season, this is one of the things about baseball right now, is like everybody's like home runs or strikeouts. And so it was very much like that, because particularly in an exhibition context where people are just swinging for the fences.
Yeah.
They had the most home runs I think that's ever been in an All-Star game, 10 home runs in the game.
So what was the final score?
Forget now.
I mean, how so
I it guess, went extra innings.
So I guess my extended,
which was really weird too, right? Because once upon a time, like for a while there, whoever won the All-Star game got to give home field advantage.
But oh, that's not the case anymore?
In World Series now. They
did they away with that?
Yeah, because it was, I like, guess. First of all, the American League always won, and it was like, well, this doesn't seem to make any sense. So now I think they do it based on the team's actual records. But so the problem you run into, if it's a tie game, you know, you go to extra innings in baseball, people east of the pond may not realize the game can just keep going until somebody wins. I guess it's not unlike cricket, I guess, right? So, you know, it's like you just keep going.
Cricket has a time, the cricket has a limit that you come up against, and games do end in a tie.
So, can't end in a tie. Well, I thought to myself, well, for the problem with the All-Star game is you're trying to work all the players in, and so you change the pitchers really fast. Like, you have maybe one pitcher pitches two innings, maybe three, and then it's everybody's in for like an inning or an inning and a half kind of thing. You run out of players, right? Like, so, the point is you want everybody to get their chance to be in the game. You're not holding anybody back. Yeah. You don't have some bench that you're like, oh, you know, if we go extra innings, I've got these extra people to pinch hit and do different things. Sometimes people don't get in, but like, you do have that. So now when you go to extra innings, what are you going to do, right? So I thought maybe they don't even go extra innings, because now it doesn't matter. So just end of the game, it's a tie, hey, let's all pat each other on the back and go home. But they didn't. They went extra innings, and we actually left before the end of the game.
That was my next question to you.
Because at that point, all the Nationals had been in and left. Even the people who were Nationals from other teams had been in or had not played at all, because they were injured. So, you know, we were like, all right, you know, what else is going to happen here? And then they proceeded to, like, have a bunch of home runs in the bottom of the ninth inning, and then the 10th inning, and then the American League won as usual. But
so I'm going to put you on the spot here, and I'm going to ask you what I believe is a very intellectual and a question to ask you. So, I, and to be entirely fair, I like going to sports events when I have a rooting interest. That's a part of the experience to me. Now, I have been to sporting events where I didn't really care who won the game, but at the end of the day, sports, you know, there's a winner, there's a loser, games have climaxes. You know, at the end of the game, there's this big, the home team won or the home team lost. When you're walking out of the All-Star game, what is the sensation? Like, oh, yeah, I saw the best players in baseball, or that was a pretty good game,
it's a pretty
where can I get my T-shirt for $5? I mean, again, it's a slightly different experience, because the game itself doesn't mean as much.
No, I mean, you know, like you're rooting for your side, but it's not like you'd care that they lost. Like, oh my goodness, you know,
it's not disheartening. It's like coming out of a performance of Hamilton. Like, oh, that was very entertaining. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah, and when you can feel good about a win, it's the opposite. Like, basically, you know, if you go to a game and your regular team loses, you feel bad. You're like,
I feel bad.
Well, you're never going to come out of this and be like, oh, that really sucked. But if you won, you'd be like,
when you're done with an All-Star game, how do you evaluate that experience? Like for example, when I come out watching my teams, if they've lost, I'm like, the manager's got to go. I'm chewing it over. These players are rubbish. So-and-so, get off the field. Or if they've won, you know, you're in a good mood. Like, yay, everyone's there. This is great. An All-Star game, it is an exhibition to an extent.
I mean, just think of all the Olympic things we went to. I mean, like, you know, it's not like you cared in the big badminton match about which you might invent a little rooting interest because you go like, I like that country better than the other one, or like the way that person is.
But I will say this though,
we didn't leave and be like, oh, it was a waste of time.
No, but if you go to something as a neutral, there is still an atmosphere in the stadium or the arena of winner, loser, climax. I'm just curious. I mean, an All-Star game is ultimately pomp and circumstance, which I know we're going to get to. But like I say, do you know, when you're walking out, what are you talking about? You're talking about, it was really great seeing Brad Pitt throw out the first pitch. Or do you know what I mean? I just find it an interesting sort of
conundrum.
Okay, well, fair enough. Well, there you go. So I stumped the band.
we said, hey, that's good, you know, got our souvenirs, got a good snack, had a couple of beers, you know, it's pleasant to experience, and we're beating the traffic home.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. All right, so let's segue.
Thing about the baseball, you know, just sort of playing off of that, is that there's an article in the paper today talking about the graying of the fandom of baseball. And there's a lot of hand-wringing right now, as there is every 2 years, every 3 years, about something going on. Last year was like how long the games are. So they introduced these stupid new rule changes, which make no difference in the length of the game. This year, it's about how all anybody is really doing. Like, all the metrics that have come over the past years have led people to the conclusion that just swing for the fences. You know, you want to launch the ball higher, further. Your expected value of trying for the home run and not getting it is better than trying for singles and doubles and all the more. There's some, I forget what the right phrase is, something like the three true outcomes or something is like, you know, a strikeout or a home run or maybe a walk. I don't even know. But so a lot of hand-wringing that's making the game worse somehow, that people are more bored and you know, it's not attractive to the youth folks.
Because it's peaks and valleys entertainment, isn't it?
Yeah, but like then again,
striking out or
then,
someone hitting.
Then again, like people talk about the best era in baseball, in which in retrospect turned out to be drug fueled, you know, recent fandom, you know, was, you know, the home run races of McGuire and Bonds and Sammy Sosa, where like they were all juicing and they hit home runs like nobody's business. And boy, they were, you know, they were leading the sports page every day because everybody's look at all the exciting home runs. So not really sure why people say this is the worst thing ever.
Do you think baseball lends itself to that sort of self-analysis during the season? No.
It's the easiest sport.
And there were so many
to deal with stats. Like they're just, the sport's been around for long enough. The way it's played is a series of discrete events that you can measure. And like, you know, even before it was just averages, and ultimately they conclude, well, these aren't the greatest metrics. We got some other metrics, and now like all these folks can figure it out. So it's very scientific in the way it works, you know. Everybody can do it in the midfield, you know, like in, when you soccer things, like now they're bringing more of that into soccer. I know the guys trying to bring stuff over to Liverpool, but the
Moneyball theory of how you evaluate players.
But when you leave a game, you aren't like, you're just like, that person played well, that person played badly, you know. You aren't like, oh, you know, their pass completion rate for whatever that player was this, and so therefore that's what the problem was. It's really much more of a touch and feel kind of thing, whereas the baseball gets this now. So every time you have an article like this, they just get into this analysis, right? Like they go, oh, look at this. There are available details, and so
Well, I was also going to make this point too, and I might struggle here now to relate this to the listener in terms of explaining this now. Baseball season is 162 games.
Yeah.
So, you know,
that's the other thing. It's more data points than that.
Well, no, but in general, it's what, 162 games. And so what I'm going to say is this, in terms of your relationship with it as a fan, if I go one night and first baseman Eric hits 3 home runs. I was there the night he hit 3 home runs. But that feat is quickly dwarfed by the fact that 2 nights later they're playing again. Do you know what I mean? So what I'm saying is, in terms of discussing baseball, the sport is almost secondary to the analysis of the sport. Whereas if you go to a soccer match and a player scored, outside winger Eric scored 3 goals, a hat trick. I was there that day. That was amazing. He ran riot. The sport itself provides the talking point. And because soccer is played once or twice a week, that story of this amazing performance where this one guy scored 3 goals in one game, that fuels the conversation for 4 or 5 days. But because baseball, the actual playing out of the season, because of its volume, yeah, I'm talking about the dude hitting 3 home runs, but we played 6 games in the last 5 days. Do you know what I mean? So at some level, does baseball lend itself to all the peripheral analysis is about the age of the fans, or do you know what I mean? Whereas some sports lend themselves to the discussion that fuels game to game is about what happened within that specific game. Am I making my point there?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I don't understand if that's you're just commenting on it. It's not like a good or bad.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, like, for example, yeah. I mean, you've said, so you're talking about this article here where you're talking about the graying of,
right,
of baseball fans.
Because I never got to my point, but which is that they do analysis of ages of fans, and the Major League Baseball's average fan age is 57 years old. It was just back in 2006 down to 53, so you can tell everybody's getting older. By contrast, the NBA's average fan age is 42, which is very young. For the NFL, it's 50. For NHL, it's 49. And so the concern here is, like, are they going to age themselves out? Because as the article kind of jokes, well, you know, when you what happens next after the gray article, is people die and they're not going to baseball.
Did the article come to any conclusions as to why baseball had an older fan base?
Oh, I mean, I think it has to do with the nature of the sport. You know, like, it's long. There's tons of games, like you said. It doesn't, you know, it's for a generation that has a less of an attention span. It's not filled with action the way other things are. It doesn't have the water cooler. Well, that's some of the water cooler stuff, but like football is much more universally water cooler talk, because, you know, you have the game on the weekend and everybody comes in on Sunday and
talks
about
it. Which
is
sort of my point. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
there's I think baseball is more of an experience. Baseball is an experience that unfolds over 7 or 8 months. Whereas, for example, the NFL is a weekly, this happens. You're right. People talk about the water cooler. Oh, my goodness. Tom Brady was amazing. Everyone at a certain level can participate in that conversation. And then 1 week later, there's another event. And so these sports are served up in a much more sort of digestible form.
Yeah. Although, baseball, you know, when I think about it,
what I'm saying is I don't think baseball attracts a casual fan in the way that the NFL or any other sports can attract a casual fan. What I mean is,
I don't know if that's true. I'm going to dispute that conclusion, because I'm going to say, you can be a fan of baseball and almost never watch it. Like, you can be a fan of baseball because you can track what's going on with the team. The things that you discuss, like the bigger picture, you don't have to watch the game. You can just read the box scores every day. You can see what's going on there.
Okay.
Whereas if you don't watch the football game on Sunday,
you're out of conversation.
You're going to have that conversation about it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I mean, I was just thinking about it. You know, everybody's workplace is different, but I can tell you people talk about baseball way more at mine. Now, mind you, I work in a grayer workplace than some other people. I don't know what sports you guys talk about, but there's a lot fewer, you know, like...
Well, I'm not trying to think about...
People will talk about football, but they're much more likely to talk about how the Nats are doing. I mean, maybe part of that is because they're generally winning. I mean, certainly hockey got some conversation, but the hockey fan... there's not as many of them around.
No,
so.
No. Yeah, so, it is interesting that the notion of how a sport, you know, how a sport is digested. And like I say, I mean, to your point there, now I'm thinking about, who was the youngest fan base there? Was it the NBA? The
NBA, by far.
And that's interesting.
And it's been a big wave recently of everybody being into the NBA. It's become sort of a hipster thing.
Oh, that was part of it,
And so I'm not quite sure. I mean, every now and then I tune it in. But again, I'm not sure. I mean, there's definitely some. You see a lot more in the culture of people watch games. But I also think NBA is closer to the MLB in the sense that people are observing what's going on with the culture more than they're sitting down and watching. Because they'll have two or three games a week, right? You know, I can't remember how many games the NBA season is.
Two or three games a week, yeah.
It's so, 80.
It's half the length of baseball.
So maybe three games a week at least. The are people watching all those games? I don't think so. I mean, like, well, I mean, you know, like it's more like a celebrity culture. You know, it's all.
Yeah, I wanted to pick up on that. You just mentioned something there when you talked about celebrity culture. Maybe this is a chicken and an egg thing. I can name a whole load of NBA stars, and maybe, and again, it's chicken and egg. So I'm not going to come to. I'm going to make a statement and then maybe draw a conclusion at the end of it. I can name a load of NBA stars. I can watch TV. And when I see someone hawking on TV a new car or a soda, invariably I remember the guys who are NBA stars. While I don't follow Major League Baseball to the same extent that you do, I can't remember any current TV campaign where a Major League Baseball player is the lead pitch man for deodorant or soft drink or whatever. So I cannot decide, is it chicken and the egg, in that, well, you've just said, you know, the NBA is followed by a younger crowd, so it makes sense that advertisers will therefore then go towards that sport for pitchmen because they want to appeal to that younger demographic. So I can't decide, is it, you know, does it end up fueling itself in a way that, not necessarily because somehow the NBA is younger and cooler. Do you know what I mean? I'm not making my point.
It's true. I mean, there's more of that than you think about.
There's always been that saying.
But also, baseball again is more local, I think. And you know, like the most NBA. Well, not say most NBA games. There's a lot more NBA games on national broadcasts.
Sure.
And because like the you know, look at LeBron James. He's bounced all over the place, and so people are LeBron James fans more than they might even be like fans of the team. So like he's going to get a TV contract, whereas there's tons of ads in the DC market. With
local
baseball
dudes.
Players.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
yeah.
Like, so, and I think Bryce Harper is on a number of national campaigns for different things. He's certainly in the Gatorade series amongst other athletes, and I think he does one of the phone companies or something. But
because there was always that sort of conventional wisdom that, you know, it was rare to find NFL players as pitchmen because, you know, one of the things was always like, yeah, in the NFL, they've got a helmet on.
Well, yeah. Oh, and,
do you know
and,
what I mean?
I mean, literally the really NBA.
Facile, but that's always been something. It was the NBA, the face is out there all
right,
game.
Right, so you get a lot of shots of them. And even the baseball, there's a lot more wide shots. And you don't really see the, and you don't see the people as often, right? Like, because a guy comes up to bat once every few innings. He might stand out in left field and never, like, you'd never see him. Whereas you're going to see LeBron James up and down that court continuously.
Right.
And all the other players that are on the team. So it's a different kind of thing.
So, yeah.
I don't know what our point was there.
But I don't know what our point was. But yeah, so you're one of the old men. In fact, if anything, though, you being of indeterminate middle age, you're actually keeping that baseball number lower.
Yeah.
Right,
well,
there.
Yeah.
Although,
yeah.
Because you don't answer when you're polled by your local team about start times, right. They're probably not counting your age.
They probably have that information anyway. So another thing that came up, and you know, it's worthwhile. You can use the baseball as a launching point for it because it happens a lot in baseball, but it's not limited to baseball. There's an article. It's a broadcast, but I guess they because you can listen to it, it's 13 minutes from WBUR, which is a Boston public radio station, I think Boston right. area. Veterans speak out against militarization of sports. And then the whole thing is it's by Howard Bryant. I'm sure we could put
We will stick the article.
Where you can just read it.
Blog.
You don't have to listen to it.
We will stick the article in the blog post for you there.
It's talking about the guy, the author is working on a book that has to do with sports and patriotism generally. I think this is more about like the NFL and taking a knee at the national anthem kind
right.
of question. But part of this was coming up was just the change that September 11th. Rippled through sports and in terms of their ties to the military, that military and patriotism, I should say. It's patriotism partly and partly military, where it is just all over events nowadays
right.
that there is some very bold display of patriotism. You know, like they talk about the giant flags being unfurled.
Yes.
Well, you know, at one point, 20 some odd years ago, you did the national anthem. There was a flag in the corner. Everybody, you know, you might have a color guard come on with it, right. but you didn't have all these sort of things. The All-Star game had to, I was sort of alluding to it before, but in addition to having the Medal of Honor recipients, which for DC, I think is a little different because right. we're just the home to a lot of military type things to begin with. But they had a choir with three different colors of robes, red, white, and blue, who formed a flag out in the outfield. And okay. they're the ones who did the pretty national cool. anthem. It was pretty yeah. cool and all that. But all these things go on. And now the big thing is...
Did you get a flyover? Did they have a
yes,
flyover?
Yes, they had a flyover. Yeah. And they talk about... this article talks about the fact that, you know, a flyover was like the Super Bowl. You got to fly over the Super Bowl. And it's on all kinds of events now. Like every little minor college bowl game has a flyover, assuming they don't have a dome over their head, right? They've got a flyover there. And in fact, part of what they're talking about here is that a lot of this is paid stuff. Like you'd think, you know, you're trying to get them in there. First of all, obviously.
Paid by whom?
By the military.
Oh, they pay
like
for
to tie
it.
Into things. Now, of course, I don't know, on a flyover, they're just footing the bill for the flyover.
Okay.
And that's an opportunity there. But there's a lot of examples in this article. We don't need to go into all the details. Talking about arrangements where the armed forces, and as they say, taxpayer money, is being paid to these baseball, football, other leagues in order to get placement in the events. And I don't mean like for the national anthem, but like a recruiting event added or something like that. There's some particular event where the Air Force itself paid a bunch. And the guy this is not the author, but there's a person, what's his name? Bill Astor, or Astori, is an Air Force lieutenant colonel, retired, who writes about this whole, you know, this is like just touching on it, but he's got a whole thing about the militarization of sports. He's got some blog, you know, it's definitely sort of alternative news type things. Sure. He's trying to like cut around the edges and things. But it's just, even for people who are veterans, a number of them feel like it's pandering and it's exploiting the service in service of the sport, right? Like, so, you know, they mentioned example of the camouflage gear,
right?
So used to be you'd occasionally have something, I don't even know when they started doing this, but like now they'll do like jerseys and things that are designed to look like camouflage military stuff, hats and the like.
Right.
And then they're selling these products. And, you know, how much of this is really, is the team making money off of the fact that they're tying themselves to the military and everybody feels like they have to do the sports? Like, they make a big line in here talking about, it isn't that these teams are super patriotic, it's that they're afraid not to do this and lose the economic opportunity or right. be told, acting like they're not patriotic. So it's all very, like, building on itself. And, you know, I've talked about this before, the God Bless America song, right?
Right.
That came in, like, starting after the bombings, the World Trade Center stuff, is when it started showing up. And now it's in every Sunday game, for whatever reason, a Sunday game. But then it shows up, you know, it shows up in the special event games and stuff.
Oh, this is the seventh inning.
Okay. I'm not anti-patriotism. I'm not like, but it's just so much. I mean, like of this stuff is, and the more there is of it, the less legitimate it feels.
Well, you know? This is one of the issues. And I want to come back around to the NFL because we did mention him there. And I do think, and you use the word exploitation. And I do want to sort of give an example about that where I feel like it has reached the moment where not just patriotism, I'm actually going to name some other examples to not make this into about a, you know, king and country type issue. I do remember in 1991, the first Gulf War. And I remember the Super Bowl took place right around the time that I think Operation Desert
Shield. Yeah, there's a little bit of it there.
Now, I got that. Whitney Houston sang the national anthem. They had the flyover. The flags were out. And it all kind of made sense. I remember the weekend after 9/11, there was a lot of discussion about whether should the NFL be playing the games or not.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of people going back to, well, they played after Kennedy was shot and this type of thing. So the NFL ended up playing a slate. If I remember correctly, they had a home game in New York.
Yeah.
And I can't remember if they had a home game in D.C. or not. But they ended up playing. But obviously, because there was sort of public discussion about should we be playing or not, well, if you're going to play, you better make sure you code it in red, white, and blue. So they did that. And you are right, as to this article's point, that was sort of the birth of, okay, we're going to tie these two things together. It made sense then. But I do feel that since then, especially with the NFL. And I'm now going to use something else as an example. The NFL were the first ones in with the Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and everyone's wearing pink.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be critical of the NFL, because obviously it is a worthy cause. But at a certain level, it's slightly irregular to me watching, like, really, what are we doing here? And what I mean by that is, you know, breast cancer awareness and 90 guys going at it on a Sunday, you know, for their placing within the division, it's a slightly incongruous relationship.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No.
So I find it interesting that the NFL is more than happy to tie itself to whatever seems to be hot. And I do feel that they're tying themselves to breast cancer awareness. I don't know. The cynic in me says, well, they tie themselves to that because then it can help diffuse this, why are you guys all in on the military all the time?
Or other things where they have gender-related issues, right? Like, so, like, from they've the got all kinds of domestic violence and other types of problems that people, they're not addressing because, hey, there's not a good soundbite for that part.
Exactly.
But we can, if we all wear pink, wow, we look super supportive.
Exactly.
It's not as, that one, I think, probably you don't make as much money off it. By the way, there's a report, I forgot.
No, but who's making the money when they're all, again, to your point, yeah, they're doing all, you can get a camouflage LA Rams hat. Well, you know, during Breast Cancer Awareness Month, you can get some pink Chicago Bears accessory.
Yeah, but I think they'd be hard pressed to sort of.
And I know that money goes to the causes, and that's great. Right. But I still feel at a certain level, this is about the league and the teams who are still pushing more gear, and they're not giving 100% of their pink hat to breast cancer awareness. Some of it is going right back to whatever organization is hawking it. I mean, that is part of it. I will say this about the military: have always had a relationship as a sponsor of college sports. If you sit on a Saturday and watch college football, college basketball, they've always been all in with. Plenty of adverts. Basically, if you watch TV on a Saturday, it's car adverts, beer adverts, or adverts to join the Navy or the Coast Guard or the Air Force. And that makes perfect sense to me, because there at some moment, they are supporting something that they know has outreach for them. Like, hey, hopefully 17-year-olds are sitting around watching, you know, Michigan State, and if you're not sure what you're going to do with your life, join up.
Right.
I don't have a problem with that relationship. But I find it interesting when it works the other way around a little bit. And I do, and it was interesting. I remember the NFL got itself, though, it got itself into a lot of trouble with the Pat Tillman thing. Because Pat Tillman was an Arizona Cardinal who was in the special forces, and I think he played in the NFL.
Oh, he already played.
And then after 2000, and then after 2001, he basically stopped playing football and either re-enlisted or he went, and he was killed in a friendly fire incident in Afghanistan. And the NFL, of course, went all in on one of our own is a hero and this type of thing. And I remember at that time, they got a lot of blowback. They'd gone all in on one of their heroes. And then as it had come out more and more, the circumstances surrounding his unit getting into trouble, well, the NFL were left with a slightly, you know, because there was apparently a bit of a cover-up.
Well,
but what I'm saying is, they weren't. If you leap in too hard on something, it doesn't matter what it is. If you go throwing the coat on,
I don't think it wasn't like a thing like, well, they were wrong to say he was a hero.
But I think it didn't fit their wonderful blowback. Yeah.
You know, like, oh, this is the story's a little got more subtle nuance, which is kind of part of the other half of what this article talks about, or the guy that I mentioned talks about, is that it also smooths over the rough edges of war. Like, you know, there's a part of it, and I'm not going to go all in on this idea, but you think about it, is that, you know, when you have a flyover of things and people are like, as he even says in here, like, it's pretty cool to see big planes and stuff,
that is
right?
Cool, yeah.
But at the same time, the reason that these big planes are around is for, like, dropping bombs on people. And whether we are confident and patriotic, you never really want to do that. Like, it's not like, you know, like,
yeah, I'm just,
so like to sort of put those things as sports themes. It's always weird. It almost feels like you're trying to turn patriotism into like a sporting rooting interest, and it's much more sanitized, and it doesn't sort of show you the costs the same way.
Well, so, and also, and to be fair, you're right. It's sort of trivialized. It almost, the relationship is almost trivial. It almost trivializes. It trivializes the military.
Well, a real,
do you know what I mean?
So the,
I've trained for 9 years to be an elite fighter pilot, and unfortunately, I'm going into my squadron leader going, seriously, I've got to be flying over to San Diego Chargers again. Can't I be doing stuff off an aircraft carrier? Yeah, do you know what I mean? There's something slightly trivial about it. That actually, no, this is just a sporting event.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Right. And we don't need. I don't need to go to the game to be reminded.
Now this is not all that new, right?
Although
there's always been a PR element. I think the story about the Iwo Jima flag raising people. I know that they were like basically put on tour to go around like touting that event, and a number of them I think were a little bit off put by like I'm going to do something. I'm not a PR person, but
I'm going to hit you with your second tough intellectual question of the day.
Going to tell the other story that's in here. So the other main story that's in the article is about a guy named Nick Francona. And if you recognize that name, he's the grandson of Tito Francona, who played with Hank Aaron and other people. And his father, Terry Francona, played in the majors and was the
manager
of the Red Sox.
Yeah.
So this guy, when
they won the World Series.
Obviously, his family's got enough bucks and stuff. He's going to Penn University. He's in his first year. And a friend of his, who he used to play, youth baseball with, is in the military. And he starts to think, I'm not really contributing. So he leaves Penn to go enlist, and I think he left Penn. In any event, he ends up in the Marines, becomes a scout sniper platoon commander in Afghanistan, etc. And when he had enlisted in the Marines but not actually had gone anywhere yet, he was invited to throw a pitch out at the Red Sox game. And you can understand the story. Oh, son of the manager here is going off to fight, right, for America. Well, he declines because he's saying, I haven't done anything yet. Let me sure I signed up, but this is not, I'm not supposed to be a piece on this touting of it. So he goes off, he serves his time, serves in the military, and he comes back and he's working in baseball. And I think he ends up working for the Mets. And there was a whole thing about like where they were tying in, but the article's got more detail on it, talking about tying in families that had somebody who a deceased service member in the family, and how that would tie into stories of various people, players, actual, like maybe a similar town they were from or a similar like background or something like that. And then they're talking about like after they set this whole thing up, somebody on the Mets basically saying, yeah, you need to get permission from them that they won't sue us over the licensing of their deceased service member's name.
Oh, wow.
And he says, no, wait a minute. We're not going to do that. The story, who knows how much of this is a different slant, but he says, got fired basically from the Mets, where they're like, hey, you're doing fine, but, this is what we do. We're a business office and we're trying to be successful in this. And if you're going to get in the way of this stuff, you can go. And he's not in baseball anymore. But it's assuming all that stuff is true, and I don't have any reason to think that Terry Francona's son is making up a false story or that somebody spun it, then it's really a bad taste in your mouth about the entire process.
See, the counter argument is always going to be, I'm now going to make the counter argument, and to be fair, as a Western society here in America, Western Europe, are we the new world or the old world? What do we count as? We're the new
world. You're the old world.
Old world. Sorry. Well, I'm both.
Yeah, now you're both. Yeah.
Life's pretty good for us. Every now and again, our countries get involved in a major conflict. But when was the last time any of the Western countries...
Yeah, first world, if that's what you're thinking, first world. Resistance.
When was the last time any of the Western countries got involved in a conflict that they pretty much weren't going to win? Right? So the counter argument is, we've all got it pretty good. This is the only way, because as societies, we're actually at a point where we can take things like celebritydom and sports far too seriously. This is the only way to remind everyone about the important things that underpin our society. That would be the counter argument as to why you tie military patriotism, whatever, to sports. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well,
the counter argument. But I'm not sure. You're right. When you and you have to read the story. The Francona stuff is fascinating. How the New York Mets and the dude losing his job and the club's position that, well, this is what we do. Yeah. These are commercial opportunities. You're right. At that moment, there's a real problem here.
Yeah.
But it is interesting that the count because patriotism has become a politicized issue. You can't be in a position where you're not where you're not putting up your flag. I will say this, someone now.
That's the part that says that, you know, the people are saying they're doing it out of fear of, like, you know, somebody, like, you know.
I will say this, and it's interesting how even England has changed in the time since I have been away and been in America. I remember when I first came to America, I was always, I was very observant of the fact that everyone here flies flags on their house. And even over the last 25, 30 years, you know, if you're a politician and you don't have a Stars and Stripes pin on, you're done. You're some sort of communist traitor or whatever that may be. I did find that it is a very American thing that patriotism is something you need to make sure you sell. Whereas in England, everyone makes a big deal during the World Cup that people are flying their flags. Well, flying our flags because the team are doing well. But the rest of the year, there's not all those flags up. Do you know what I mean? It's an interesting sort of societal attitude towards expressing your love of country. And I do feel, and you're right, I think at a certain level, I put the boot into the NFL for frankly being a little bit exploitative, which I think they are. And I used Breast Cancer Awareness Month as, look, just, aren't you better off just writing your check? We don't, I mean, every Sunday, do we really think, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I think the NFL are slightly are exploitative, because I think they are in general about nearly everything. But you're right. If you're anything else, you can't afford not to be tied onto it. Because there will be, I don't know how big a section of your customer base, but there will be a vocal part of your customer base that will hold it against you that you're not. Because the bar in society has changed as to how expressive you need to be about it all.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just imagine, you know, somebody decides, you know what, I agree with Eric, the God bless America, it's really unnecessary, and we didn't do it 30 years ago, so why are we going to do it now all the time?
But the anthem is
so we can take it back. But, like, it's going to be a minute that gets onto Twitter that says, oh, you know what, I noticed this Sunday, the Nationals aren't doing God bless America.
Oh, yeah.
Man, they are really anti-American, you know, friggin' Obama or something. You know, like, throw it in there, Hillary, or, you know, we'll turn into a debate over that, which is what it shouldn't be.
We've had this conversation before, that the national anthem itself, I don't know about other countries, I'm trying to think what happened at the Tour de France, but I remember when I went to the Tour de France, because it was the very first day, they had a flyover and the whole thing, but that's because it was stage one.
Yeah.
But in England, when you go to a soccer game, there's no national anthem. They only roll the national anthem is associated with the big game,
right?
The final of the international game. Whereas here, you go to any which sporting event, didn't they can't start, start until the
didn't
next
Didn't they start
anthem.
Singing it on their own when during the one of the England games and one of the...
They do.
The first, well, like, suddenly the crowd was all just going ahead and jumping
and
into
and
it.
And frankly, I need to get this off my chest. I got very angry with Brazil. I only found out at this last World Cup when one of the commentators was explaining that when they play the anthems, they only play one verse. Each team gets...
Oh, really? Like
a snippet? Yeah, I didn't know. No. You get the first verse. I'd always assumed that for many of these countries, and I never thought about it until then, like, wow, every anthem seems to be about 2.5 minutes. Oh. But in fact, you just get one verse. I noticed in a Brazil game, the Brazil fans took it upon themselves and their team. When their one verse had finished,
they kept going.
And the team kept going. And so the other team couldn't... I can't remember who they were playing. It might have been... Not Costa Rica, it may have been someone else. They couldn't break from their...
They're all standing.
They had to keep standing there, because then it's like they're probably thinking, oh, if we start running around while they're still singing, people are going to have a go at us for being dismissive to them. But I'm sitting there looking at Brazilian fans going, no, you only get one verse. Your verse is done. It's not my problem that your verses are short.
Yeah.
Get a new anthem where it's 5 minutes if you want to stand there for 5 minutes. It is funny, the whole thing around it all.
Did you see Oliver Giroud is supposed to shave his head?
Oh, really?
Yeah, he had promised to shave his head if France won. And for people who don't know, Oliver Giroud, who's like former Arsenal, now Chelsea, at least technically, I don't know what they're going to do with him, but he's very much a...
Preening schmo.
Yeah. Like, he's got a very stylish hair and beard, and, you know, prides himself
on his
look.
And
so, you know, he said he'd shave his head. And apparently he's waiting until his son's christening or something. His wife said, if you're going to shave your head, could you do it after we take the pictures of the family at the christening?
So the patriotism in sports.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting stuff.
It is,
it's tough questions, and I hope nobody takes it the wrong way, because it's not like I'm anti.
But again,
patriotic. But it's just a ratcheting thing, and if you can never go back, what are we going to all get, like, 50 years from now? We're just going to spend all of our, like, we'll paint all our houses red, white, and blue, because that's how far you have to go.
If you're a dude who's been to Miramar and you're flying Top Gun and you're stuck doing flyovers of ball games, yeah. Let me tell you, I'm with you, man. I want to find a conflict for you. Because I didn't train you. Miramar's where Top Gun, you know, that's where they do Top Gun.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas those dudes now, they're just doing flyovers.
Yeah.
One day, one guy's just going to Kirk out.
Yeah, doing
let
some
me,
other
let me
stuff
bomb the stadium just for the heck of it. Because that's what I was trained to do. So there you go. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's fans. Do we have anything else on sports?
Well, on the lighter side, yes. And hitting to the youth side, basically on the same piece of paper in the Washington Post that had the article about the graying of the baseball fans was an article. It's titled "Athletes' Obsession with Fortnite Concerns Teams" by Sam Fortier.
Please explain.
Fortnite.
To your listener, actually,
Fortnite is one of those
to
things.
Our older listeners, of which I am one. Yeah. What the hell is Fortnite?
So Fortnite is like I had not heard
Fortnite
about
is
it.
Two
it's
weeks.
It's a video game.
Okay,
but I had not heard anything about it until a month ago when one of my friends who's got teenage sons.
So it's like an Xbox
was
type
like,
thing.
Well, apparently it's really more on PCs.
I'm not a gamer. Okay.
Like, but it's a multiplayer thing. So like, it's all connected to the internet, and it's like a survival battle. And so it'll start a Fortnite game, and you're a character like parachutes in, and you're fighting, or maybe you're teammates with other players in their houses, and you can wear the headsets, and you can be talking to each other during the game, and they could be strangers or they could be friends, whatever it is. And then whoever's left at the end of the game is the winner, you know, like, and so you're knocking each other off. It doesn't appear to me, what I've seen of it doesn't appear to be very gory or anything like that. It's very video gamey type battle stuff. And in fact, the various
it's not like
characters dance. There's
Halo
all these dances you can do when you there's all these videos available. When I was trying to figure out what it was, I was looking online and people have these videos where like somebody's in battle and somebody else is behind them doing this crazy, their character's doing a crazy dance, you know, meaning in the game. And apparently during the World Cup, somebody did, you know the old loser symbol, you put an L up to your forehead.
Yeah.
Well, apparently they did something like that, which somebody's like, what was that all about? And apparently it's a Fortnite thing, which I'm going to guess was adapting the, like, you're a loser or something like that dance. I've seen, like, the
so
Fortnite
the
characters doing a dance with the L thing.
To his Fortnite competitors.
Well,
he was
taking a piece of Fortnite culture and bringing it into the World Cup situation. So anyway, but this game, like a lot of these multiplayer games, can suck people into it. And so what this article is about, which is weird for a reason I'll get into in a second, is that there's a worry, particularly among like developmental teams, minor league teams, that the kids who are like on these teams are like staying up till 4 a.m. playing Fortnite and are too tired to like do their proper training and focus on things. Now, I think like at some level that's just sort of absurd because, well, doesn't that apply to everything you do for a living? Like, you know, like you don't do your schoolwork.
Yeah.
You don't like if you show up at work tired. So I don't know why it's unique, but like, and they talk about the potential of video game addiction, you know, and whether these sort of things can be addictive. And we like, I haven't done a lot of video games, but there's certain like things you could find yourself. I remember at some point it might not even been a video game, but it was the kind of thing where you'd like get involved in and suddenly you go, I just freaking burned 2 hours doing whatever the hell I was doing here. And it's not very worthwhile.
I think video gaming is one of those things, and also
that's right, TV. That's what
and also, yeah. Also, I was actually going to say, well, no, watching stuff on YouTube.
Yeah.
Suddenly, I'll be watching stuff on YouTube, and all of a sudden, an hour and a half of my day has just gone by. Whereas TV is different because you know when you sit down, this episode of The Sopranos begins at 9
well,
o'clock.
Well, except, you know,
it
like,
it will be finished at 10 o'clock.
Well, but,
no, but
you know,
binge watching
cable,
is different.
Yeah,
I'm not talking about binge watching.
No, I mean binge
about
watching. I just mean the fact that you can just be like, oh, that's over. Let me just check up a couple channels down. Oh, look, there's something else to tie me in. It's kind of like YouTube.
I do find that, and again, I'm so unhip to any of this stuff. Like Sims, Minecraft. People can throw these terms at me and I have no idea what they're talking about.
My impression
about,
was it was that this was a little bit like Minecraft.
But it has aspects
play, but like
of
it's
like,
more grown up kind of
yeah,
like, you know, aspect. Minecraft's sort of like smaller kids.
And I do, but I do understand.
It's apparently free, by the way. Like, so you don't even need to buy the game.
Oh, really?
I don't know how they make
well,
their money.
It's
but
communal, so you can log into
I think
a
you
website.
Can buy into like extra strength and stuff like that. But it's not like you got to go buy a console game. So I think you just download it onto your computer.
We are going to do a show about esports, but we need to do our research first. So we will keep this article somewhere on there. But I will say this as to, I do understand your point was quite correct, that this can apply to anyone. Like, you can have a regular job, and if you're up until 4 a.m, you're in trouble. But I do get how for athletes it's a problem, because they don't work an 8-hour day like everyone else. So right there, they have more time on their hands. Now, you know, I guess back in the day, that spare time was spent drinking.
We used to be worried about drinking. Yeah. Some organizations, players' passion begins, could hurt their performance in the actual sport.
So to be fair, if I'm on a sports team, I'm probably quite happy that my guys are not out getting into trouble and they're just playing Fortnite for 6 hours after practice. But yes, you're correct. These games suck you in. And the next thing you know, the guy's showing up all bleary-eyed because he was playing Fortnite until 5 a.m. and he didn't look at his playbook and knows all the plays to run the pass patterns the next day of practice. So I do get that. I guess, was there any particular sporting group that were attracted, or was it just sportsmen in general?
Well, they do mention hockey a lot. I don't know. I think that's because hockey has developmental... Hockey's developmental structure is similar... Well, it's similar to soccer, and that you can end up on a developmental team at a young age.
Yeah.
You know, that is within the pro structure. So I think that's they mention that, and maybe also hockey is the one that's probably... Not to generalize hockey players, but maybe the most likely to geek out and sit around in a room and play the games kind of thing. Yeah. A little bit of like a male hangout culture that's not like about cruising out there and being super cool and stylish. It's more about like what's fun to do. You know?
I don't know. I guess it beats.
They were probably the ones that were most likely to drink before, and so they're probably now the most that's likely ones true, to yeah. have the games kind of thing. Yeah. But what I think one of the interesting things about it is like, Fortnite apparently is already huge, right? And as soon as if you find somebody with teenage kids, you can ask and they'll be like, oh yeah. But it seems to have bubbled up in like that. Like, you know, like suddenly like everybody's talking about this Fortnite thing.
Again, I referenced Call of Duty and Halo and stuff like that. I'm gonna presume
it looks a little like Halo, which were those sort of like, you know, the characters have like helmets and stuff, so it makes it easier to put them in the computer. You know, it doesn't have to have like real.
But
faces.
The fact that there's people dancing and it seems like a weird cross between Halo and Super Mario Brothers,
right?
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Which is the goofy
a little Sims-ish. I mean, I think it's supposed to be like
the Minecraft and all that kind of stuff. So there you go. Don't if you're playing Fortnite. And I guess
now I feel like I need to check it out, although I don't think basically it says you need to have a pretty decent computer, and I don't think I have a decent enough computer to keep up with it.
Also, I think part of the problem Part of the thing about Fortnite compared to a lot of other games, there are a lot of games where you just play yourself, but Fortnite is much more of a group thing.
Yeah.
You know, you're in there on the internet and your buddies and the guy down the street. And
well, it's a whole other topic of like when I talk to folks with the teenagers now and how they don't like go out and see other people. They just hang around and play their Fortnite game or their texting or, you know, their social interaction. They don't need to actually get together in person because you can put a headset on and you're playing games with each other.
It's never been my thing.
No, of course not your thing. You're indeterminate, increasingly middle-aged.
To be fair, I'm more than happy to do stuff against the computer. But the whole point of doing stuff against the computer is I actually don't want to be interacting with other people.
Well, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I don't want to interact with you.
Well, you know, you and I are in the same boat where, like, the whole step of having to, like, play against other people that you might not know is a little weird and creepy. But I think that's abnormal for a current day 16-year-old.
I'm terrible at computer games anyway.
Yeah, exactly. What do you want to go there and get beat by real people? If I get beat by the computer, like, sure, it's a computer. Yeah. It's Terminator, you know?
All right.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's Fortnite for you.
Yep.
Come to the top of the hour.
I think that does it for now.
That's been our show. Coming up next couple of weeks, we do still have, because the only way to now make us do it is for me to say that we're going to do it. We are going to be test driving rental bikes.
Yeah.
Also, we have a best of show coming up because it's summer vacation time for us soon. But we do have some things.
We were going to do bikes this weekend, except that it rained 4 inches yesterday, and it's raining a couple more inches today. Yeah. Not ideal bike.
And I wasn't, although that might have been something. We could have sort of had like a slapstick version.
It was like 8 o'clock last night, and, you know, we're by the lake. It's pouring rain out there. It's dark. And some guy goes by in his stand-up paddleboard. I'm like, that's actually just foolish. Like, you know, if you felt there's a bunch of drainage coming into the lake, I mean, this guy gets like put under. Nobody's going to know he's there.
There's always some nut job out there. Yeah. Some eco nut job. So there you go. Yeah. So we've taken shots at everyone today. The NFL, the military. We didn't take a shot at the military, but eco dudes.
Yeah.
Gamers. Yeah. You're all targets for us. This has been the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at Libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for the Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.